Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to the best animated shows ever, so far, with MC and Troy.
I'm Troy.
And I'm MC.
And it's the best animated shows ever, so far, again. Hi, MC.
Hi.
It's been a hot minute.
Yeah, it's been about a month, I think.
Something like that. So I had a baby, and I was thinking that we should maybe take a break while I had a baby, and then I was like, nah, it's fine. And so we started Star Trek, and then it wasn't fine, and I haven't slept just since then.
Yeah.
No sleep.
Yeah, I kind of had the idea that this might happen, so I wasn't too worried. When it kept getting pushed back, I'm like, well, yeah, you just had a kid. You're not sleeping.
I'm not sleeping. The thing is, I've been awake at the times we normally record, so like that wasn't the issue.
You're busy.
It's just, yeah, I'm either awake and holding the kid or awake and going, oh God, the kid's sleeping. I can actually close my eyes for like 5 minutes. But things have quieted down a little bit. He's getting a little bit better at sleeping. He's right next to me right now, just straight chilling. And so I thought, MC, that you and I might talk a little bit about some Star Trek.
Yeah, we can get yesteryear out of the way.
I only have one behind-the-scenes thing I want to talk about before we actually get into breaking down the show, which is I want to talk about voice acting again a little bit, but specifically I want to talk about the voice actor who plays young Spock in this episode. Did you happen to look anything up about this?
No, but I'm going to guess it's one of two people.
You'll be wrong. Because it's somebody you've never heard of. Okay. It's a kid named Billy Simpson, I believe. I'm trying to find his name now. Yes, Billy Simpson. So here's the thing. Just on a scale of 1 to 10, what did you think of the performance of young Spock?
1 to 10, probably a 4.
Okay, I think that's about fair. Like, it's not awful, but it's also not great. So here's what happened. They call up Billy Simpson, and they're like, yo, kid, you like Star Trek? And he's like, I mean, I guess so. I kind of know Star Trek a little bit. And they're like, cool, we want you to come audition for Star Trek. You're going to audition to play young Spock. And he's like, all right, cool. And so he gets there for his audition. And normally they give you like a scene maybe to read for the audition. They give him the whole script. And he's like, oh, all right, this is a little bit weird. And then normally they take you into like a room for the audition. They took him into a recording booth, and he's like, well, that's not totally unheard of, because that way they, you know, can listen back to it later on. And so then they took him through the entire script for his audition. And then they called him back and were like, congratulations, you got the part. And he's like, cool, when do I come record? And they're like, you already did, thanks. And they just used his audition recording for the actual show.
Ah.
Where he wasn't like playing off of anyone. He was just like reading the lines all by himself with no other actors to interact with or anything. I feel so bad for Billy Simpson. This sounds like the worst way to record dialogue ever.
It sounds like he was expecting something a little bit different as well. When it came to it, he was like, oh, I'm actually gonna get a proper recording, not that. So you can tell why it wasn't like the best performance.
Yeah, I after reading that, I'm like, okay, I'll give him a bit of a break, because that's not his fault. Honestly, it's the director's fault for not like having him come back in. The rest of the cast, the regular cast, was all in the same room when they recorded this. Like,
see?
They were all together recording together. And this is an episode, I mean, they recorded a couple episodes all at once, but in this episode, you've got, like, two scenes that have the cast together. The rest of the time, it's, like, young Spock and other people, and they didn't bother to have him recording with them. I just think it's unfair.
That's silly.
On the other hand, they did also bring back Mark Leonard, who played Sarek. So they actually had the guy who played Sarek in the original series come to his voice, which I think is pretty neat. It's cool to have that continuity. That's all I got for behind-the-scenes stuff. My kid, I don't know if you can hear him. He's
gurgling.
He's asleep, but gurgling. He's like, he's laying there. His eyes have not opened once, but he keeps twisting his arms around and going, boo, 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 boo. I think he's going to let us keep recording, though, right after these messages.
And we're back.
We're back, MC. We are back with yesteryear. Oh, we didn't do a content warning. Hey, content warning. If you've listened this far, thank you very much for listening. But if you have sensitivity to, like, dying animals or the death of a pet, this is not the episode to listen to. And you should come back next week, maybe. We'll see if we manage to make this weekly. In any case, an animal dies in this one, and it's very sad. Don't listen if you don't want to hear that. Abuh.
Yeah, but actually it first starts off with some of the senior crew. I think Spock and Kirk come back through the portal. And the rest of the crew's standing there.
Mm-hmm. Including Bones is on standby. Yeah. He's hanging out.
We get one of the good things about this cartoon where we get to see an alien just straight up drawn on the screen with interacting with all the cast and crew.
Yeah, like a crazy bird person. He's all gold and befeathered, and he's got big old wings and a feather loincloth.
When they come back, everyone doesn't recognize Spock. It's really weird. And Kirk is like, "What are you talking about? This is Spock. You don't recognize Spock?"
And Bones is like, "I think I'd remember if we knew a Vulcan."
Yeah, and he's like, when they get back to the ship, Scotty's like, "Who's that Vulcan?" And it's like, Kirk says something along the lines of, no one will disrespect the second officer. Mm-hmm. And then Andorian walks in and says, "No one's treated me poorly." And
bum, bum, bum.
Yeah. Well, we should actually mention what they were doing in the portal. It was a trip through time to see the dawn of the Orion civilization.
Yeah, but so they're using the Guardian of the Past forever, which they know can mess with time, but they're just using it strictly observation. We're not going to interfere. We're not going to make any changes to the timeline. We're just observing.
Yeah.
Except for then they come back and they're like, "Ah, dip. No one knows who Spock is, and there's an Andorian on the ship. We must have broken something."
Yeah, and it turns out that they didn't break something. Something was broken. And they had to fix it. Essentially, what we find out is Spock died when he was a child in this timeline.
Important, it's not that important, but it wasn't due to Kirk and Spock's trip. It was while they were back observing the Orion Syndicate, another team was observing Vulcan. And somehow, that team observing Vulcan, I think they said because, I think it's that Spock was supposed to be on the team that was observing Vulcan, but because he was on the team observing the Orion Syndicate instead, then he wasn't there on the Vulcan team. And what Spock says is that when he was a kid, he remembers his cousin saving his life, and Kirk's like, "Did your cousin happen to look and sound exactly like you?" And Spock's like, "Yes, yeah, he definitely did." And they're like, "Okay, so you were supposed to be there to save your life, but you weren't. Good job, Spock."
And essentially, like, "We got to send you back to save yourself as a kid."
Mm-hmm. There's apparently no, like, rules about, like, time traveling to the same period over and over again or meeting your younger self. Like, none of the normal time travel rules apply when you're using the Guardian of Forever. You just do whatever you want.
Yeah, it's whatever you want to do. But they also find out that his mother dies returning back to Earth after his death.
Yeah, because his parents got divorced because Spock died, and somehow that made an Andorian be in Starfleet. That part's not clear to me, but whatever.
I mean, he probably is serving on another ship in their timeline. It's just,
are there Andorians in Starfleet?
Yeah.
I don't remember. I thought they were not super friendly.
No, they're a warrior race, but they are part of the Federation. They're, in fact, one of the first ones when you watch Enterprise.
Well, that's not one of the first ones, because that comes after a whole bunch of other Star Trek.
No.
I mean, it's the first one in the timeline. Of Star Trek. Yeah. I haven't gotten there in my rewatch yet. It's too much to keep in my head. We're just now in season 6 of Voyager, coming along smoothly.
Oh, okay.
We're really making some progress.
Well, Enterprise is like the first ship Earth sends.
Oliver, go downstairs. Go on.
But yeah, in Enterprise, it's about like them forming the Federation, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know. I've seen it before. I just haven't seen it recently.
But in this one, they like all the time travel stuff that we get from like all these different shows tells us you shouldn't be messing with time.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that's exactly what Spock and Kirk plan to do. They send him back.
Right. And this script was written by DC Fontana, who we talked about before. And I was reading about her background on this, and she said that she was so excited when she remembered The Guardian of Forever because she wanted to do some sort of time travel thing with a character rescuing themselves from death, but she couldn't figure out how to make it work without breaking the timeline. And then she's like, oh, we'll just use The Guardian of Forever and just say, you know, space magic or whatever. Who cares?
Oh, okay.
And before Spock goes back, there's one other thing I want to call it, which is he has a brief conversation with the Andorian where the Andorian's like, hey, so... I'm not gonna exist, huh, when you go back in time? And Spock's like, yeah, maybe. And he's like, dope, that's dope. I should be upset about that, but for some reason I'm not. And Spock's like, well, you're a pretty chill dude. And then they high five and an explosion happens in the background. And apparently this was one of the themes that she really wanted to have in there, is like exploring somebody's existence ceasing because of time travel, but then they just didn't have time for it, and so that conversation is all we got.
Aww. No, oh that, that's really funny.
Why? Sadie, go away. Oliver went downstairs and came back with a different dog. Hi, Sadie.
But anyway, Spock goes back to the past, to Vulcan.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially he sees his younger self getting bullied, getting called an Earther and a Terran.
Uh-huh. Being mocked by the other Vulcan younglings.
Yeah, and he tries... The younger version of him tries to do a Vulcan nerve pinch on one of them, and they just push him to the ground and call him useless. And yeah,
they say that his father's brought shame to Vulcan by marrying a human.
Yeah. And that's when Sarek shows up and apologizes for the emotional outburst of his young son. And this is when Spock puts into place the identity of his cousin, Selik, who he remembers from when he was a kid.
So, except his cousin, Selik, doesn't exist at all. Yeah, and Sarek is just like, ah, cool, one of my cousins, sweet, I'm glad to have you here. It's so nice to have family. You should come hang out at my house. And then they high five and a big explosion happens behind them. Because Sarek, a Vulcan, it turns out, is like the most trusting dude in the world. Just somebody shows up and is like, yeah, we're totally family. Can I stay in your home? And he's like,
I mean,
yeah, why not?
He does look like him. Like, and they sort of mention that as well. It's, yeah, no, but it's one of those things where it's like, he looks familiar, and it's like, probably just the familiar, like, appearance of our forefathers, and he's like, ah, yes, probably. Like,
yeah, just that makes total sense. High five. Now, remind me, okay, MC, you've read the Harry Potter books.
Yeah.
In book 7, Bill Weasley and Fleur Delacour are getting married. And Harry Potter's at the wedding, disguised as a Weasley cousin, where they make him take some polyjuice potion from a kid who works in the town nearby, a muggle kid, and they just pretend that he's one of the Weasley cousins. But nobody ever says, like, whose child are you? And that's my problem here. Cedric's like, oh, you my cousin? Like, he doesn't then go, like, by what family? Like, nothing.
He explains that.
Surely they have, like, family dinners and stuff at Cedric's house where they all sit down and they say, ah, so Selic, or my cousin, tell me of your line of the family tree. And no, they don't do that. They just never talk about it at all. He's just like, you're my cousin? Cool, come over to my place.
No, well, he says he's descended of T'Pol and someone else. I can't remember.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, that's totally in there. That's in the speech with Selic when he's introducing himself as such.
Well, fine.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. So then Spock's like, this is all messed up because the ritual thing that young Spock's going to go on is in a couple days. But I know for sure it was tomorrow that my cousin saved me. So the timeline's all screwy and I don't know what could possibly be going wrong. And then we find out that young Spock is like, listen, I'm supposed to go on this ritual thing in a couple days, but I need to prove to myself that I'm worthy. So I'm going to go do it today instead on my own without telling anybody except for my big fat cat bear. And I'm going to tell my big fat cat bear that he's a big fatty and he can't come with me.
Essentially, yes, that's exactly what happens. And the cat bear ignores him and follows him grumpily anyway.
Listen, I don't want to be insulting to the big fat cat bear, but young Spock is like, you're too fat and lazy to come with me. And Ichaya, the cat bear, is like, brr. And he's like, nope, you got to stay here. And then he just keeps following him. And
yeah,
it's real sweet, because even though young Spock's kind of a jerk to the big fat cat bear, the big fat cat bear loves young Spock and he's going to be there for him.
The best thing ever is when it's making big puppy dog eyes and he's like, you make that face at mother and it works, but it won't work with me. I'm being a Vulcan.
Yeah, I'm too like heartless and Vulcanish to let you come with me, Chaya, because the logic says that you're a big fat cat bear and you're too lazy and you got to stay home. And then he wanders into the most dangerous woods, because right outside of the main city of Vulcan, apparently there's just super dangerous woods.
No, well, all of Vulcan is supposed to be super dangerous. That's why they're so much stronger and everything than us. Yeah, and instead of having iron in their bloodstream, I guess it's copper, which is why their blood's green.
MC, is this a good time for us to talk about Vulcan fashion?
Sure.
Because, listen, all right, there's two aspects to Vulcan fashion. One is the robes. The adults on Vulcan and young Spock, when he goes on his journey, wear robes that are... they look like they're probably a light material, because Vulcan is kind of a desert planet. So yeah. Even though the robes themselves are kind of big.
I know what's coming, I imagine... because it's definitely, you're not talking about the robes. Like, robes are fairly normal things.
I imagine you
want to talk about the children's outfits of a sash and short shorts. That's surely where this conversation's going. Why are you avoiding it?
The children are wearing BDSM gear. And it's not okay. They're wearing black leather panties and blue belts and straps and giant boots. They look like they are on their way to a BDSM club. I've seen these outfits in person, not at a con. That's not where I've seen this. It was when I was in San Francisco at a pride parade. That's where I've seen this outfit. And children should not be wearing it anywhere, even on Vulcan. I get that it's warm, but seriously, leather panties are not the appropriate gear to put on your children.
It's just weird.
It's very strange. Anyway, so young Spock's running out through the desert forest area, and what's that? Back at home, Sarek's like, hey, so our son ran away, huh, Amanda? And she's like, yep, sure did. And he's like, huh, so did our cousin. I hope that stranger that I invited into my home didn't run away with my child, but I guess everything's fine. I'm Sarek of Vulcan. And then he high-fives himself, and a big explosion happens in the background.
Well, at the same time, the elder Spock is following the younger Spock into the desert to keep him safe from whatever's about to happen, because he's like, oh no, that's right. I remembered that I actually did run off in the middle of the night to do this thing foolishly. It wasn't actually the time that I was supposed to do my quest. I can't remember what they call it now.
A maturity test. I don't remember what the actual name for it is. But yeah, he's like, oh, that's right. I ran out early to do it. And that means young Spock did too. So he goes and follows himself. And then Battle Cat shows up from the He-Man series and tries to attack young Spock. What's this? Ichaya, the big fat cat bear, comes in and tackles the Battle Cat and saves Spock from getting eaten. And then adult Spock shows up and gets a shoulder ride from Battle Cat and gives it a neck pinch and knocks it out and saves the day.
And Ichaya...
And then the episode ends and nothing bad happens, MC.
Listen, Ichaya got knocked down and there was about to be a killing blow. It didn't happen. And as they're walking back, having this lovely conversation between Spock and Spock about, being Vulcan and human and all that sort of stuff. Ichaya kills over. Poison.
Older Spock is like, there's some human in my bloodline and it's not the end of the world. You know, I had to choose which side of my family to embrace, but being human doesn't mean you're weak. It means that you learn to control your emotions instead of letting them control you and all this great stuff. And then, Ichaya falls over and it turns out the Battle Cat had poisonous fangs or claws or something. Claws. And so even though Ichaya didn't lose the fight, he got poisoned. And Spock is like, he's dying. We can get a healer, but he's dying. And then young Spock runs across the desert and gets a healer and then runs back. And the healer's like, you're sitting here watching this and you're like, oh, thank goodness they got a healer here in time because he's a healer and surely he's going to heal this big loyal Battle Cat dog. But no, the healer's like, nah, he's dying. There is no antidote. I cannot save him. He's dying.
Yeah, it's been too long since the poison got into the bloodstream. I can either prolong the life with much pain, or we can set them free, essentially, I think he says. And they leave the decision up to Little Spock. Because that's something that you want to put onto a child.
Oh, but that was the moral point of this episode, was that a kid needs to realize how this works. And so young Spock is like, listen, my two options are to let my pet live on in pain and suffering or to let him pass with dignity. And I know that the right thing to do is to let him go and let him pass with dignity rather than lay here suffering. And so they euthanize Ichaya.
And young Spock learns the lesson about being a Vulcan and how things are hard and you have feelings and all that sort of stuff. And then Spock goes back and the timeline's fixed.
Yep. And he tells Kirk, he's like, everything should be back to normal except for one thing. A pet, the one thing changed is a pet died. And Kirk's like, oh, NBD, and makes a jerk off motion. And Spock is like, well, hey, it matters to me, you dingus. And then he slaps him in the face and there's a big explosion behind him.
That would have been a better ending.
And Kirk made me so mad in this that he's like, well, that won't matter in the grand scheme of things. So what actually happens is Kirk's like, it won't matter in the grand scheme of things or the grand schemes of time or whatever. And Spock's like, it might to some. Which is like, okay, that's a good line. But also, slap Kirk in the face for being a jerk about your pet dying. It's not okay, Kirk.
But then it's like nothing's changed and they go back on their adventure.
Yep, and then it's got to end with a joke. So they go back up to the ship and Bones is like, thank God you guys are back. I had to recalibrate all my medical equipment to scan a Vulcan and I've been waiting. And then Spock's like, oh, at a different time, you might have had, say, your equipment for Andorian. And he's like, an Andorian? What is this, some kind of joke? Vulcans don't make jokes. And then Spock's like, oh, well, times change. And then blah, 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 and then it ends.
Yeah.
This episode makes me really sad. The animal dying was actually not part of the original pitch that DC Fontana did, and then she added it in there, and the network was like, oh god, no, oh no, oh no, you can't do this. And Gene Roddenberry was like, hey, Dorothy wants to have this in there, we're having it in there. And they were like, okay, I guess. And she wanted it in there because she thought that was an important thing for kids to, like, learn how to deal with. Because for a lot of kids, the first time they really have to deal with death in a personal way is the death of a pet. And so she wanted to give kids a way to be able to kind of prepare themselves for that. And so I think it is good for that. But it's also, God, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. Especially when it's like, this is a Vulcan thing to do. Yeah. I think that's Sarek's line or whatever. Like when he goes back, he's like, I want to be Vulcan or something. And he's like, this is a good decision.
Yeah, this it turns out is like where young Spock like learned to embrace his Vulcan-ness. Which is cool. It's cool to see that background, but man, it's hard. And it's good because that's a hard thing. About a year ago, just a little over a year ago, I had to make this choice for one of my dogs, and so like that still stings, and I still like am hurting from it. But this show, I think, does a very good job of like giving you a picture of what that's like. So bravo, Star Trek the Animated Series. Even though you broke my heart, you did it in a really good way.
Yeah.
So that's it for this one.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a downer, but it's good. Next we have... What do we have next, MC?
What is it called?
Next we have One of Our Planets is Missing.
All right.
Listen, spoilers for next week. I'm pretty sure this episode is exactly the same episode as the first episode that we watched. Like, it's exactly the same. They just gave it a new title, a better title, if I could say. Because while I don't remember this story being very distinct, One of Our Planets is Missing is a great title for some pulpy, silly sci-fi stuff.
Yeah.
One of Our Planets is Missing. Cool. I'm here to see One of Our Planets is Missing. That sounds fun.
So next time, I'm not going to say next week.
Next time, yeah. Because time is relative, and we might take a trip through the Guardian of Forever and end up trapped in the 30s and accidentally confirming Hitler's rise to power like Kirk did, because that's what happened once in an episode of Star Trek. But not this time. This time they just killed a pet. Wow, it's hard to come up with a fun thing to say at the end of this, because everything I'm coming up with is downers.
It's a whole bunch of downers.
Oh, here's a fun thing. Young Spock is like, now that I've learned to be a good Vulcan, I'm totally going to go and Vulcan neck pinch the shit out of those bullies in my class.
Yes.
Bye.
Yeah. Our cousin taught me how to do the neck pinch really well, so I'm going to go beat up on my bullies.
Beat up on my bullies has a good sound to it. Like, you could put a beat to that. Beat up on my bullies. Beat up on my bullies. Like, I like that. There's something there. No, there's not. Goodbye. I'm stopping this.
Thanks for listening to the best animated shows ever so far. Find the show on Twitter at BaseSFCast or email us at BaseSFCast@gmail.com. That's BaseSFCast. Our intro music is Funnin' and Sunnin', and our outro music is Motivator, both by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com, and licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Thanks again for listening, and tune in next time.
This has been a presentation
of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work
for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.